Welcome to the most enchanted podcast in all the realms.
I'm Lynn.
I'm Elisa.
And I'm Chell.
Together, we are
the Narrators 3.
And this is Once Upon a Rewatch,
where all plot devices come with a price.
Welcome to Once Upon a Rewatch, Season 4, Episode 14, Enter the Dragon. The original air date was March 15th, 2015. The writers were David H. Goodman and Jerome Swartz. The director was Ralph Haymaker. And the title card was The Burning Tree. We begin our tale in Storybrooke, where Regina greets Maleficent at Granny's Diner, seated at a booth with Cruella and Ursula.
And it should be noted that Maleficent looks hot as hell.
She looks so good.
Yeah, amazing. Best land without magic outfit yet.
Regina claims she's making it easy for Maleficent to kill her for having kept her trapped for 30 years. But Maleficent responds that there are much worse crimes to be punished. Cruella interjects that Regina is close with the heroes, and Regina responds, not by choice. She reminds Maleficent of how much she wanted her revenge, claiming that, to survive in Storybrooke, she had to play nice, as she watched the heroes enjoy the happiness she never had. She tells Maleficent that she wants in on their plans. A skeptical Ursula claims that Regina can't expect them to trust her, and Maleficent chimes in that that is exactly why Regina is there. She wants to prove to the trio that she's still one of them.
You guys gonna kiss?
I'm pretty sure they're gonna. Regina and Maleficent have amazing chemistry.
I love that to kind of toast this test. Maleficent just picks up a random shot of alcohol, not from her table, and Regina just knocks it back before crushing the glass in her hand. Like, I get it. No fallen soldiers. But whose shot was that?
Probably like Leroy's.
Yeah, but again, no fallen soldiers, unless he passed out.
He probably did.
Yeah, he's under the table. In the enchanted forest of the past, a young Snow White gleefully gallops around the palace grounds as a distraught Queen Regina looks on from the stable. In a tantrum, she closes the door and tears down several of Snow White's ribbons.
It's been a long time since we saw a good old-fashioned Queen Regina tantrum.
I love that Lana is so consistent with her use of the young Regina voice. It really helps sell, like, who she is at this point in time in the story.
It really does. Yeah, like, that kick up of her pitch is really good.
Yeah. Appearing in the stable, Rumpelstiltskin remarks on the irony of how the role of horses have played in their story. Distraught, Regina reminds him that he promised to teach her magic so she could end Snow White's charmed existence. Rumpelstiltskin responds that he is, and calls Regina impatient, magically making the book in her hand appear in his. Examining the tome, he recognizes it as Maleficent's spellbook, which was found among Cora's things.
I have to give props to Robert Carlyle in this scene because, you know, whatever we think of Rumpelstiltskin, you know, is neither here nor there. This is like me just giving props for him as an actor, because as soon as Regina mentions that this book was in Cora's belongings, you see Rumpelstiltskin's facial expressions get pretty emotional. Like, it's still a raw point, you know, for him. So, like, he's not over Cora at this moment in time.
Yeah, I mean, Rumpelstiltskin drives me absolute nuts, but Robert Carlyle is an amazing actor, and he puts so much into this, even when the scripts are giving him nothing.
Yeah, and honestly, I actually really like past Rumpel in this episode a lot.
Oh, yeah, it's very classic Rumpel.
Yeah, very classic season one Rumpel, which yeah. I really like and really appreciated.
This flashback is so season one in, like, the best way.
Mm-hmm.
Regina tells Rumpelstiltskin that she wants to get her revenge. But Rumpelstiltskin tells her that she doesn't even know what revenge looks like. Regina agrees, saying that his magic lessons are taking her nowhere. Rumpelstiltskin instructs her to look in the mirror, literally, which shows a barren field. Rumpelstiltskin claims it was once a forest that Maleficent burned down in her dragon form. With a flame so hot, there is one tree still on fire, half a lifetime later. Encouraged, Regina asks Rumpelstiltskin how Maleficent accomplished such a feat. He replies that she cultivated her magic skill with the most precious commodity, time. He tells Regina that if she rushes into things, she will never be ready.
He also, like, makes this weird comment about how it's not impressive that Maleficent can turn into a dragon. And I was just like, okay, and what can you turn into other than a pathetic, out-of-touch divorcee?
I love how cool Regina thinks Maleficent is for turning into a dragon. Like, I love that for her.
Yeah, honestly, I just think Rumple was jealous. That's all. he's like, dragon, shmragon.
Regina wonders if Rumpelstiltskin may not be a skilled enough teacher. Amused, Rumpelstiltskin tells her that her impatience is a problem. He wishes her luck and poofs Regina in the wasteland he showed her, within sight of the forbidden fortress. A distraught Regina turns, gazing at a single burning tree. Encouraged, she heads towards the castle. In the present-day charming loft, Emma confronts her parents about Regina going undercover, asking why she wasn't informed. Her father claims there wasn't time, and Emma insists that they should have informed her. Mary Margaret asks Emma if she thinks she could have stopped Regina, and Emma responds that she could have helped, that her former job as a bail bonds person required her to pretend to be someone else.
Also, that's Emma's girlfriend, and she's worried about her.
She is so worried about her, and it is very sweet.
So sweet. Look how far they've come.
I know. Emma asks where Regina is supposed to check in, and her parents look at each other nervously. Emma repeats the question, and her father tells her that Regina was meant to check in about an hour ago. The previous night, Regina, Cruella, Ursula, and Maleficent drive along the back roads in Cruella's car. Regina asks how Ursula and Cruella resurrected Maleficent. Maleficent deflects the question, telling Regina that some of them don't trust her. Abruptly, Cruella stops the car on a set of train tracks, and a train's whistle is heard, approaching quickly. The game is Don't Be a Hero, and the first to save the group loses.
This scene gave me Lost Boys flashbacks. Like when they're on the bridge and they jump.
One of us, Michael.
One of us.
They're maggots, Michael.
Worms.
I love that movie.
My favorite vampire movie ever.
The train approaches the vehicle quickly. And just before impact, an unhappy looking Regina makes the car appear off the track. Cruella gives her a look and tells Maleficent to pay up, calling Regina soft. Maleficent puts a diamond bracelet into her outstretched palm, claiming Regina is just rusty and it means nothing. She asks Regina if they're playing too rough, and Regina replies that she thinks they should find some real trouble. Also, question, why is there a train in Storybrooke? It's not connected to the outside world. Like, did these ladies actually drive outside city lines just to find train tracks?
No, it's like the one at Disneyland. It just does a circle.
Oh, yeah. It just does a circle.
It's the Grand Circle Tour.
I mean, like, can they leave Storybrooke, theoretically?
They've got Ingrid's little scroll.
Okay. Then, yeah. I would say they just went outside. Yeah.
Your answer was much more fun, Lynn.
I like your answer, too.
Who do you think drives the little train just around Storybrooke? Yeah,
who do you think drives the train?
Goofy.
Goofy.
Goofy. Oh, no. I don't want to be on that train. I've seen what happens in Mickey Runaway Railway.
To be fair, that's not actually Goofy's fault. It's Mickey's.
That's true.
Mickey's the one that runs into the track switch.
Unlike Mickey.
He had a hot babe with him. He was distracted.
True.
Goofy's just a single dad raising his son in Storybrooke, driving his little train.
I mean, it's less of a stretch than some of the other things they've brought into Once Upon a Time. Let's be real.
Mm-hmm. I mean, Gus was a man.
Yeah,
Don't talk about Gus.
Why not?
A very handsome man who deserved so much better than what the show did.
Oh my God. Justice for Gus.
Meanwhile, Henry is at the pawn shop studying the pages of his storybook with a magnifying glass. Belle approaches with some food. As they look at the illustration of a door, Belle asks if he's found anything. Henry theorizes that the door has something to do with the author. Belle assures Henry he will find it and leaves him in the pawn shop to investigate. Henry examines the fine details on the page with his magnifying glass. He wonders what August tried to tell him.
Henry, my sweet boy, your first mistake was assuming August was capable of doing anything even remotely useful.
Henry working and hanging out with Belle at the pawn shop is very cute, though. I like that he still goes there.
Yeah, I like that those two still have a relationship. It's like, your grandpa might be hot garbage, but I'm still going to be here for you and a good influence, and I'm going to feed you. And she gives him a sandwich and everything.
Yeah.
It's so sweet.
It's really sweet. I really like that little detail. I was pleasantly surprised by it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, somebody's got to. His moms are both distracted as fuck. Who else is feeding this boy?
That's true. Oh my gosh, I didn't even think about that, but yeah.
Belle's like the only one caring for him right now.
Oh no. Elsewhere, Emma pulls up to Granny's diner as Hook exits. She rushes to him, asking if he found anything in there. The captain found a burned table, broken bottles, and a very irate Granny. Regina and the witches drank the place dry, apparently. Killian supposes Regina won them over. Emma fears that that's what they wanted her to think. Hook assures her they don't even know what happened yet. That's what worries Emma, as they can't find Regina anywhere. The sheriff wonders why Regina hasn't come back yet, if she had everything under control. Over in the woods, David and Mary Margaret are still searching for Regina, who they are increasingly worried about. Suddenly, Mary Margaret points out something on the side of the road. They park beside a burnt-out sheriff's car and get out to investigate. Charming questions what happened. Maleficent happened, Regina says, appearing from behind. And there goes what we assumed was Graham's car that they finally started using, like, an episode ago.
I do love how the Charmings are very worried about Regina.
I know, it's very sweet.
Very sweet.
Regina explains that was Mal's idea of a good time. Regina had to prove herself, which meant lots of drinking, burning, and destruction. After apologizing about the car, Regina reminds the couple that they shouldn't be here, and their next meeting has to be covert. Next time, you didn't find out what they're planning? Charming asks. Regina points out it has only been one night, but she found out they're hiding something powerful. Snow asks what it is. Regina claims to not know. So the only thing you accomplished was property destruction, Snow moans. Regina states she accomplished trust. Last time Regina came to Maleficent, but this time it'll be the other way around. Back in the past, Queen Regina enters the Forbidden Fortress, calling out for Maleficent. When there's no response, Regina states that she is learning magic, beginner stuff, and she thought Maleficent could teach her. Why don't you show me what you've learnt and light that fireplace? A disembodied voice calls out. Regina moves over to the cold fireplace and holds out her hand, struggling to make fire. When she makes it, she shoots the ball and lights the fire. She smiles. That's pathetic, but it'll do. Maleficent appears, looking like she's seen better days.
Dude. I would spend hours getting my hair that big and that crimped. Also, this dressing gown, Mal is in her glam rock Bowie era.
She is so fabulous. Regina watches in awe as Maleficent sits beside the fire and comments that it feels nice since she hasn't had a proper fire in years. The powerful witch takes a needle from the pot and pricks her finger with it, leading Regina to ask what it is. You won't read about this in any spell book, Maleficent explains. A single drop of sleeping curse mixed with seawater and toadstool helps take the edge off.
Oh no, Mal really is in her Bowie in Berlin era.
Yeah. As Maleficent sits back in her chair, Regina shows disappointment on her face. Maleficent laughs and asks if she's not everything Regina expected. Regina asks what happened to Maleficent. A rose, Maleficent responds. A briar rose. Regina points out that she's the girl she put under a sleeping curse. Maleficent explains that King Stefan ruined it all with true love's kiss. As Mal pricks herself again, she tells Regina that she doesn't even care anymore. A confused queen says that the Maleficent she read about wouldn't give up. Regina tells the witch she needs to remember who she is. Angry, Maleficent rises and approaches Regina. Regina backs away. Mal reminds Regina that the old Maleficent had a foul temper, And if you insulted her, she'd turn into a dragon and eat your flesh. Maleficent drops her head, commenting that it's good for Regina that she already had breakfast. Take your dusty book and get out of my castle, she says, pushing Regina away. Back in Storybrook, Maleficent, Cruella, and Ursula enter Mr. Gold's cabin, where an impatient Mr. Gold prods a fire, demanding to know where the hell they've been all night.
You're not my real dad. I do what I want.
Maleficent tells him not to be nasty, as Regina came to find them, and they had some catching up to do. Gold asks what she was after. Ursula explains that she was sniffing around for information, but Cruella assures him they were careful and she doesn't know a thing. Gold states Regina presents an intriguing possibility. Maleficent asks if he believes she'll help them. She explains that heartbreak turned her into a monster once before, and now her heart is broken anew. She comments that she's lost love and is in great pain. Maleficent adds that she and him both know pain makes you stronger. Indeed it does, he agrees. He claims when war hits Storybrooke, everyone will have to choose a side, including Regina. And what war is that? Maleficent asks. The one we're about to start. And tonight we're gonna throw the first punch, Gold replies.
Ruh-roh, we got a badass in here.
It's really frustrating to me that they had to make Rumple the brains behind the Queens of Mean trio. Like, yeah. They clearly could have stood on their own.
Yeah, it does a little smack of misogyny to be like, these three little ladies need a man to come in and do all the thinking so they can stick to clothes and nail polish or whatever.
Yep.
Yeah. Don't love that. Do not love that. We return to the past, where a defeated Regina is walking down a road. A passing carriage stops per the passenger's request. The Duke opens the window and asks the Queen what she's doing in the middle of nowhere. The Queen answers that she's walking home to Leopold's castle. The Duke comments that it's a long walk. He offers her a ride as far as the next kingdom, as he's headed that way for the royal wedding of Princess Aurora. We flash to Regina storming back into the Forbidden Fortress with Aurora's wedding invitation. It's like a mirror. Like, that's a fancy-ass invitation. Regina tells Maleficent that a whole new generation is getting their happy ending while she rots in her castle. The defeated witch asks why she cares so much. The queen explains that if someone as powerful as Maleficent can't get their revenge, then neither will she. Maleficent appears to be sympathetic initially, but advises Regina to give up. As Maleficent walks away, Regina states no, grabbing the invitation and claiming it's a reason to get up, turn back into a dragon, and fight. Maleficent painfully reveals that she cannot turn back into a dragon anymore, as she lost the fire. Then let's get that fire back, the queen finishes.
Wow, this is gay.
I know, I'm like, kiss, 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 through the whole scene.
Homoeroticism in my show?
In my
show? It's more common than you think.
Especially with Regina, man.
I did. Yeah. Regina has the most chemistry with every single woman on this show.
I know.
Her and Mulan.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Oh, my God. Her and Mulan.
Have we ever had a scene with them before?
No.
No, I don't think we could handle it.
Back in Storybrooke, Regina picks up the mess in her mausoleum caused during her night with the Queens of Darkness. Maleficent enters and apologizes for not being able to stay and clean. After some playful banter, Maleficent pulls out two pills and assures Regina that they're aspirin, not poison, explaining that they'll help with Regina's hangover. Regina says she knows what they are, but points out that Maleficent isn't usually nice. Nice has nothing to do with it, she tells her as she fixes her hair in the mirror. I need you sharp tonight. Regina wonders if it's for more games, but Maleficent tells her there are no more games. You want to know why we're in this town? The fact is, we're after the same thing as you, the author, she reveals. To Regina's shock, Maleficent claims that Gold explained the whole story to Cruella back in New York. Regina wishes her luck finding him, explaining she's been searching for months. Maleficent tells her that she's been going about it all wrong, and what she needs is some new allies with new leads. Regina wonders if the new leads have anything to do with the powerful magic they're hiding. Maleficent says that before she lets her in on that secret, she has a job for her. And like literally every scene with Regina and Maleficent and flashbacks and present day, there's a moment where you're like, are they going to kiss? Because there's one in this scene too.
So gay. I love it.
That night, Snow, David, Emma, and Hook enter the Storybrooke Public Library. Towards the back, David calls out that they are here. Regina emerges from behind the shelves and scolds Emma for bringing her family to their covert check-in. Emma warns this is a bad idea, as Maleficent is dangerous and Regina doesn't know the first thing about going undercover. Regina assures Emma she's a quick study, revealing that Maleficent already told her why they're in Storybrooke. Regina only wants the author to change her fate, whereas they want to shift the entire balance so that villains win and heroes lose. Furthermore, the queens have a lead that the heroes don't, and tonight Regina is to help steal it. Emma claims these things never end well and insists on tailing Regina, much to the mayor's concern. Emma insists she is a part of Operation Mongoose, so she will help Regina whether Regina likes it or not. A short while later, Regina stands outside the library. As she waits, she looks over to the distance to see Emma keeping watch inside her father's truck. They turn towards the sound of a revving engine and see Corella's car driving down the road. Regina readies herself for what's to come. When the car reaches Regina, the doors open and nobody appears to be inside, confusing the evil queen. "Ready to take a drive?" Maleficent says, appearing behind her. "You want me to get in that?" Regina asks. Maleficent explains that Corella enchanted the car to drive itself. Mal offers Regina the wheel if she prefers. Regina says she much more prefers that, before asking where the other two are. Maleficent assures her that it's only them two tonight, like old times. Meanwhile, Belle and Will are having a dessert date in a booth at Granny's Diner. As Belle recommends her date try some of the cake, Hook sits next to Will, shoving him further into the booth. Will stares at the pirate incredulously.
Poor Will is just like, "Excuse me, are you lost? Can I help you?"
I know, like, please just let him have his nice date with Belle. You leave our Will alone. Belle introduces Hook to Will, but asks if they've met, sensing the tension. Will confirms that they have and then suggests taking it outside away from Belle. Hook sneers, but says he's here for Belle and they need to talk in private.
This Hook is a little suspicious. Just pretend you can hear the air quotes in my voice when I say Hook.
Alone, Hook briefs Belle on Regina's covert mission. "And no one knows what these three witches want Regina to help them still?" Belle asks. He tells her they don't know for sure, but they're powerful witches seeking more power. He rhetorically asks who is more powerful than the Dark One before asking if his dagger is still in town, as he fears that the queens will use it to force Rumple to do their bidding. Belle questions how that's possible, as the dagger is useless while Rumple is out of Storybrooke. Hook supposes they found a way to lure him back. Belle begins to fear that any of them could use it to control him, or worse, kill him and become the Dark One themselves. Hook assures her that won't happen and asks if she hid the dagger somewhere safe. She confirms that she did. Hook tells her they need to move it, as the witches knew Rumple on the outside, so they may have learned about where she might hide something. He tells her they need to put it somewhere they'd never think to look. So a conflicted Belle asks where. Hook assures her that if she wants to hide buried treasure where no one can find it, then she can leave it up to a pirate. Elsewhere, Regina and Maleficent ride in Corella's car, while Emma tails them in her father's truck. As they continue to drive, Emma tracks Regina's location on GPS. And Emma is being so obvious tailing them. She's like,
oh my God.
She's right behind them.
Right behind them. I'm like, go on foot, like with a bicycle. Like, what is this?
Ridiculous. The two witches arrive at Marco's house. Maleficent tells Regina that the queens intend on making Pinocchio reveal his information on the author. Regina says she already tried but failed, but August's memories were wiped when he was turned back into a boy. Maleficent supposes the trouble was her not asking the question more forcefully.
Dang, Maleficent's gonna kick the shit out of a child.
Regina is displeased by the implication of this comment, causing Maleficent to worry Cruella and Ursula were right about Regina going soft. Maleficent says if Regina wants to prove she's still the evil queen that Mal remembers, then she has to kidnap the boy. Back in the Enchanted Forest, Maleficent asks the queen why it matters if her tree is still burning. Regina says Mal's spark will reignite the dragon inside of her. The queen walks past the witch and picks up her old horned helmet that sits on her throne. The queen passes it to Maleficent and orders her to get dressed. Maleficent looks at her horned helmet and then up at Regina, determined.
Come on, Maleficent, time to put on your snood.
A while later, Maleficent stands before the burning tree with the queen nearby. Mal readies herself before spreading her arms and inhaling the fire, hoping to regain her power. After inhaling all the flames, she lets out a big gasp for air. Maleficent isn't sure if it worked. The queen, noticing people approaching on horseback, says they're about to find out. The two women turn to see King Stefan and his guards riding towards them. And it's Balthazar from Supernatural! I don't remember him being in Once Upon a Time at all.
I don't remember this episode at all.
He was only in this one episode.
I remember this episode because I remember how gay it was.
I remember very little about the second half of the season.
As they step forward, Maleficent slams her staff into the ground. A black smoke surrounds her, growing large as it does when she turns into a dragon. Yet, once the smoke fades, Maleficent is still in her human form. She failed. Left defenseless, the guards aim their swords at the women. King Stefan says Maleficent appears to have made a fool of herself again. She looks up at him with rage. Back in Storybrooke, Marco and Pinocchio are making a wooden rocking horse together in their garage. There's a knock at the door and Regina enters. Flicking her hand, she causes the father and son to drop to the floor unconscious. And after that really gentle moment between Marco and Regina understanding each other as parents in the last episode, this moment of her having to betray his trust is a little heartbreaking, honestly, like, because Regina's been asked to, you know, go undercover.
Mm-hmm.
It's causing her to undo all these bridges she's worked so hard to rebuild, and it's sad, man. That's sad. Regina is visibly conflicted. Before she can make another move, Emma enters through the back door. Emma insists on staying until Regina reveals what Maleficent has her doing. The former mayor explains that they're after Pinocchio. Emma reiterates that these things never end well, suggesting they take him out to the back for safety.
I don't know, it's August. I think it's fine to just let them have him.
Regina questions what will happen when the dragon realizes what she's planning. Emma reminds her that they're dealing with a child, so it's too big of a risk. Regina assures Emma that she will be there to protect him should any harm come to him. Emma points out that Regina is outnumbered. Regina promises she isn't in over her head, pointing out that Emma doesn't know them as she does. Emma points out that since they came to town, her superpower has been going haywire.
Aha! Finally, acknowledgement of the superpower. Thank you, writers.
Emma laments that it seems like everyone, including her parents, are lying to her. Regina assures her that the only ones lying are Maleficent and her friends. She explains that they've taken a book from the hero's playbook and started working together, which means they need to take a page out of theirs and break some rules. Emma decides to trust Regina, but warns that she'll be on Regina's tail, and if she sees anything she doesn't like, she'll come and blazon. Shortly thereafter, Regina carries the unconscious Pinocchio out of the garage and snugly sets him in the back seat of the car. Before Regina gets back into the car, she pulls out her phone, which Emma is using to track her location. She looks down at it with reluctance as she gets an idea. Back in the Enchanted Forest, Maleficent and the queen walk through the barren landscape with their hands bound as King Stefan and his guards follow. I'm not going out like this, the queen says, as smoke emits from the ropes around her wrists.
Regina, you're literally the queen of a neighboring country. Just inform these yahoos that they're literally going to start a war by holding you captive.
I know. Maleficent insists she can't defeat them. Not without the dragon's help, Regina adds before burning the ropes off her hands. Regina conjures a fireball, taking out one of the guards with it. Yet, Regina is left defenseless once she fails to conjure another. The guards and Stefan draw their swords to kill her. Regina is left scared until she hears the sounds of magical smoke next to her. She looks up to see that Maleficent has transformed into her dragon form. The dragon roars and takes off into the air, causing Stefan to order his men to retreat. Maleficent swoops in the air and breathes fire at King Stefan, who deflects it with his shield. In Storybrook, Emma watches the tracker and waits for Regina and Maleficent to leave Marco's garage. Emma grows frustrated before realizing that something isn't right. Once outside, she sees that the car is gone and finds Regina's phone on the floor. She picks it up and reads a message left by the former mayor, reading, "I got this." Back in the Enchanted Forest, Princess Aurora, whose wedding dress is ready nearby, sits in her chamber, brushing her hair in the mirror as she hums a song to herself. Maleficent approaches the oblivious princess from behind. Aurora stands to face the witch, aware that she is Maleficent. "But my father," she says before being cut off by Maleficent, who points out that he was going to protect her, but failed. The princess panics. Maleficent explains she was going to kill her parents until she realized their suffering would be far worse when they see what she's going to do to Aurora.
I'm just so confused about the topsy-turvy-ass way they're approaching the Sleeping Beauty story. Like, the whole Aurora's mom is Briar Rose thing makes zero sense and really shows a lack of critical thinking on the writer's part, because just taking away the fact that they're the same person, just come up with a different name for Aurora's mom. Briar Rose is the name the fairies gave Aurora when she was in hiding because she was a flower hidden in the wild. It makes no sense, and it's stupid. Just name Aurora's mom something else. Name her literally anything else.
When I was watching the episode, I was like, wait, what? And then I was like, oh, I wonder if they're going off the lore from the Maleficent movie with Angelina Jolie. So then I go look that up after I finish this, and I'm like, no.
No, because she's not Briar Rose in that. She didn't curse her in that.
No, and she, like, her name was, like, Leela or whatever. And because, you know, like, it seemed like she had, like, personal beef with Stefan, which I know was a pivotal plot point in the Maleficent film. So that's why I thought, oh, they're going with that. But after reading the plot, I was like, oh, no, this has nothing to do with it. Okay.
It's stupid and lazy is what it is.
Yeah, I think it's literally them just trying to make it work with the timeline. And so they have Maleficent having tried to cast a spell once before, and then they use the name Briar Rose because they thought they were being clever. Like Anna and Elsa's mom being Gerda from the Snow Queen.
Mm-hmm. Like, just name her literally anything else. I don't care. Be like, oh, it's Queen Barbara.
Yeah, I think they're being cute.
It's not cute because there's a distinct reason why Aurora is called Briar Rose.
Right.
It's not just a name. There's a reason behind it. And if they actually, like, cared about the fucking lore of the source material, they would know that. But they don't. They're lazy.
Maleficent pricks Aurora's finger with a needle coated with the sleeping curse. The young princess immediately falls asleep. Maleficent rests her body on a bed. The queen approaches, having watched everything, and tells her friend that it was inspired. Maleficent explains that it would never happen if it wasn't for her, as she reminded her who she is.
Friendship is magic, y'all. Except, is it friendship? According to Kristen Bauer of Von Stratton, during a live Q&A during a DragonCon panel, she actually did confirm that the chemistry between Maleficent and Regina was initially founded on the love the two actresses have for one another as friends, but then subsequently built upon to intentionally hint at them having a romantic relationship. And I saw the quote, so this is not even just like in the ether of like Reddit. I saw the quote, I saw the reference. It was awesome.
I love that. Thank you, Kristen, for confirming what we are all seeing.
Yeah, because I was about to say for like the millionth time, wow, that's gay about this scene.
Mm-hmm. Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
In Storybrooke, Belle unwraps the dagger. She wonders where he will hide it. He tells her the less she knows, the better, ordering her to take Gould's car, and then the next time they'll see each other is when it's hidden. Belle thanks Killian, stating she wouldn't know what she'd do after everything that happened if Rumple returned. Hook says she doesn't have to worry about that, holding out his hand to take the dagger. Belle goes to pass it, but pulls away, worrying that Rumple may already be in Storybrooke. Belle explains that she has a terrible feeling, and the dagger is her only protection.
Girl, trust those instincts. Why are they writing Belle so dumb? Like, if there is even a chance that your shape-shifting husband is back in town, why trust anyone? Like, especially when they start talking about things that should be sending red flags to you, like dagger. Be like, yeah, the dagger is fine. Piss off and let me eat my chocolate cake with my new boyfriend.
I know. Hook supposes that there's one way to tell. Use the dagger to command him. Belle holds out the dagger and commands the Dark One to come and face her if he's here. With that, Hook's head instantly turns to face Belle. Belle supposes she was wrong and proceeds to hand the dagger over to Hook before heading back to the car. After she gets in the car and drives away, Hook looks down at the dagger and lets out a wicked smile. A cloud of purple smoke surrounds him, and he turns back into Rumpelstiltskin.
Oh, wow. Such a twist. I've had enough of this guy.
Gotta always lie to the wife. Ugh, this is the worst, and I feel so bad for Belle. A short while later, Mr. Gould transforms back into Hook as he enters the pawn shop. Belle, who is sniffing a rose, turns to him and asks if the dagger is safe. He assures her that it is, explaining that they must now swear a pirate's oath and never talk about what happened today, as it's the only way to assure the dagger stays safe.
Pretty sure that's not effective unless you're both pirates, but fucking okay.
Belle nods and then looks with confusion as Hook takes her hand and places it on his chest before placing his hand on her chest.
Sir, that's... no. Like, what the fuck?
I'm very uncomfortable.
And it's also just like, Hook, now as we know him, would not do that.
Mm-hmm. No, and like, he's Belle's
even
friend.
Even skeezy Hook wouldn't have done that.
Right.
Like, he's Belle's friend. So, like, Rumple is wearing her friend and then, like, touching her, and it's not okay.
Yeah.
Ugh. Feels really scummy that he's being someone who she's become close to, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is on purpose, so she'll trust him.
Yeah.
The pirate steps closer to Belle, assuring her that she has his word. In return, she assures him that he has her word. They step away from each other before the pirate asks if the rose is from her admirer, Will. She chuckles and tells him it was outside when she arrived. Hook asks if things are serious. She smiles that it's new, but beyond that, she doesn't know. She tells him that after Rumple, it's so nice to spend time with someone who is no more than they say they are.
Yeehaw.
A disheartened Hook asks if she's over Rumple. She explains that she doesn't think she'll ever be over him. But for now, Will makes her smile. And I really love that line, Will makes me smile. Because that's what she deserves.
Mm-hmm.
Hook says he's glad to hear that and wishes her good night before walking away. Belle stops him as he leaves, asking what happened between him and Will, referring to their clear history. Hook tells her that he took something he cares for.
Get fucked. Will didn't take anything. taking something implies that you had it. It's just like, didn't steal Belle from you. They're both been hurt by their respective significant others, and they're finding comfort in each other.
Mm-hmm.
To just like honest, good people mm-hmm. being honest and good together. Get fucked.
Ew, go away. You're dumb and I hate you.
Back in the past, Rumpelstiltskin is surprised Regina returned home so quickly. The queen tells Rumpel how Mal got her groove back and can now transform back into a dragon. A dragon who was more than happy to fly her new bestie home.
Is that what your kids are calling it these days?
Like, oh, she rode Maleficent.
I bet she did.
A confused Rumpel points out that he thought the queen was the one seeking a teacher, not the other way around. The queen reveals that she was, but then she realized she already had one who was doing quite well with her. The Dark One is glad to hear it, saying Regina is doing quite well, too. Rumpelstiltskin notes Snow White's horse taking a wee nap, a 100-year nap, according to Regina, who now sees that death is too good for Snow White, so Regina needs to take away what she loves. Rumpel tells her that's a lesson he's been trying to teach all along. The queen says she's finally ready to learn, and she'll do it no matter how long it takes. We return to Storybrooke, where Regina is not only surprised that their hangout is Gold's cabin, but that Mr. Gold himself is there, with control of his dagger again. Regina supposes Gold has finally accepted the same truth she has, that they cannot get their happy endings without the author, stating they must be on the same side. With that, Cruella enters the cabin, holding the unconscious Pinocchio, followed by Ursula. She places the child down on the chair as Rumpel explains that now that they have the boy, they can finally take their first steps. As the Dark One steps forward, he explains they won't ask young Pinocchio to remember anything because he can't. Gold then holds his dagger in front of the child and uses it to transform him back to his adult form.
Boo.
And I am so sorry, Lynn. Welcome back, August, Gold says, awakening the returned man who looks around in abject fear. End credits.
Wow, so I already hated him, but Rumpelstiltskin is officially the worst character in this show for bringing fuckboy August back into my life, and I wish him a very shit your pants and then die. I mean, otherwise it was probably the best episode we've gotten this half of the season because it was mostly just Regina and Maleficent being super gay.
I really, really love Kristen Bauer Von Stratton. Like, she's so fucking good as Maleficent, and I am so grateful we get to have more of her. Of course, I'm not excited to see August. Ugh. But despite that, I did really like this episode, especially the flashback scenes. Those were solid gold.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the flashbacks in this episode. It was definitely the best one of this arc so far. Of course, it's only the third group of flashbacks we've had so far, but it's so much better than the other two flashback storylines we've seen this half of the season. I thought the story between a young Queen Regina idolizing Maleficent, finding her as an absolute train wreck, and then helping her rediscover the power in herself to seek revenge was a really fun story. It was really engaging to watch. It was really beautifully acted by Lana and Kristen, and overall felt natural. Like, oh yeah, of course, this was the history of these two. It just really worked for me. Also, their chemistry was absolutely off the charts in both the flashbacks and the present day, and that was also very, very fun to watch. My biggest complaint, like my other two narrators, would definitely be the Pinocchio August plot. But honestly, one of the most uncomfortable things of that for me was the scene of Marco trusting Regina and letting her into the workshop just for, you know, her to have to betray them. I get so uncomfortable watching characters break the trust of others. Speaking of breaking trust, like Rumpelstiltskin once again lying and manipulating his wife, at this time wearing the face of her friend, it felt really icky. Like, poor Belle, she deserves so much better than that. But at least the Regina and Maleficent plot was just, it was a blast. I really enjoyed it. All right. Should we talk about some costumes?
Yes. So I adore Maleficent's civilian Storybrooke outfit. It's very 1930s criminal fraternal organization chic. I wish I had more notes other than the four-ply silk blouse note that Eduardo Castro put on his drawing of the outfit, but I just couldn't find any other notations in his Instagram feed where he usually does post some stuff, but he didn't caption any of these other than like Maleficent and Storybrooke.
I absolutely love the Storybrooke look for Maleficent. She looks so good. And also, I really like the flashback train wreck Maleficent look. I think it's also very fabulous. She's an icon.
I also did want to point out that we do see Aurora's wedding dress on like a dress form.
Yeah.
And that is actually Cora's wedding dress, just with different sleeves.
Interesting.
Yep. And we'll see it again with different sleeves.
I mean, that's very crafty, but I do wish we would have actually gotten a full Aurora wedding look.
I don't even think we ever see her wedding.
No.
Maybe. So,
I don't think so.
Yeah. So it makes sense that they would just go ahead and reuse that.
And then Aurora's light blue dress, which I think maybe was supposed to be a dressing gown, but it was really delicate looking. It was very, very pretty. I feel like Lynn, you would have been very into that dress.
Oh, Aurora's light blue dress? Oh, no. Yeah. I was all about it.
Mm-hmm. It was so pretty. It was very cute. Like, that's the perfect prancing in a field of flowers dress.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's talk about some guest stars.
Ooh.
It's time for Who's That Guest Star? We have Sebastian Rocher as King Stefan. A Scottish-French actor, Sebastian Rocher is known for his roles on Odyssey 5, Fringe, General Hospital, The Originals, and Supernatural, where he may hold the record for most guest stars to also guest star on Supernatural with 6 episodes. Like, I'd have to go back and count, but I'm pretty sure that he has won this completely arbitrary contest that I have just made up in my head right now.
Is there a prize?
To be determined.
Okay.
Lynn and me did really enjoy Balthazar on Supernatural.
Yeah, the fact that you guys even like recognized him, I was like, okay, they're gonna get a kick out of this then.
Yeah. He might be tied. I don't remember how many episodes Benny was in. But the actor who played Benny was the man who, like, terrorized young Rumpelstiltskin. Not, like, child Rumpelstiltskin, but, like, young Rumpelstiltskin in
the episode the
episode where
the guard. Like, he's, like, a soldier, right?
Yeah, when, he embarrasses him in front of Bay and, like, makes him kiss his shoes.
Okay, I'll look at that one.
Yeah. Benny was also reoccurring for like half a season. So he might be tied with Sebastian.
Might be. I'm going to go look. His name is Ty Olson, and he was in 10 episodes of Supernatural.
I remember we had Benny for like a half season. Benny was a vampire.
Oh, okay.
He was a Southern boat captain vampire. Mm-hmm. I really enjoyed Benny. Benny was a fun character. I liked him. I like Balthazar too. Balthazar was a fallen angel, if I remember correctly.
Yes, I think so.
Yeah, he was just kind of like lived his little decadent life. He was fun. They were fun. They're both fun characters from what I remember.
So then we have Russell Roberts as the Duke in the Carriage. Roberts has enjoyed a long career comprised mostly of voice work, of which you can hear on shows like My Little Pony, Friendship is Magic, Polly World, which is, I think, all about Polly Pocket, Barbie as Rapunzel, Barbie and the Magic Pegasus, Barbie and the Island Princess, and Barbie Mariposa and the Fairy Princess.
I love that.
I love that for him. He's always like a king.
So, that's beautiful.
He also has a guest starred on numerous television shows such as, yep, you guessed it, Supernatural. But he only has 3, so he's not even in the running.
All right. Now it's time to take a trip down once upon a timeline. So the flashbacks that most closely come before the ones seen in this episode were actually those of Anna and Elsa's parents' ship sinking on the way to the Enchanted Forest in season 4, episode 1, A Tale of Two Sisters. And the flashbacks we have seen so far that most closely follow the ones seen here are actually those from season 4, episode 12, Darkness on the Edge of Town, where the Queens of Mean Club is officially formed during their adventure in Bald Mountain. Also, while the event is not seen on screen, Maleficent casting the spell to turn Prince Philip into the Yagwai also happens shortly after the flashbacks we see here. All right, now it's time for some rants and raves. What is everyone liking or disliking this week?
I finally got to see Lisa Frankenstein after looking forward to it for a year. It was really fun. I worried a couple times it was going to be too much for my wife, but I think she did okay with it. It was very much my brand of weird, highly stylized horror, and it was also probably the cutest that Cole Sprouse has ever looked, in my humble opinion.
I did really like it. I did really like it. There's, you know, a few moments where I was like, oh no, but I did just fine with it. I had a lot of fun with it. It gave me kind of dark comedy where it was like, you know, a little extra dark, kind of like a Heathers, but I liked it.
I think I do want to see Lisa Frankenstein.
We also started watching the anime Delicious in Dungeon, and it's a very cute show. For a moment, I was worried. I was like, will I still enjoy this as a vegetarian?
As a lot of the storytelling revolves around them cooking and making meals out of the monsters that they have fought and killed in the dungeon in order to, you know, sustain them in the dungeon.
But the characters are all really cute and the world building is interesting. So I'm having fun with it.
The only new media that I've consumed as of late is Dune 2, and it was a masterpiece. I got to go see it again because I'm a stooge. I got a little bit on a Werner Herzog kick because my other podcast is finally getting revamped. Ha! Get it? Because it's vampires ruined my life. Anyway, we watched the 1979 Nosferatu the Vampire, which was fun to reacquaint myself with because I did see it, but really long time ago. I also got two new tattoos, and I'm really happy with them.
Yay! I saw them on Insta. They were cute.
Yeah.
I like the Mr. Destiny one.
Thank you. Me too. I look down on him and he looks back up at me and it's just lovely. I think the last time I spoke about wanting comfort shows, and you know what? No. I want to be in the weeds of my emotions. I am going to go for that Last of Us rewatch.
Next time on Once Upon a Rewatch. Hook leverages his complicated history with Ursula to find out what she knows about Gold's endgame. Gold and the Queens of Darkness torture August for information about the author as Emma, Mary Margaret, and David race to find them. Regina grows concerned for Robin Hood's safety while she struggles to maintain her cover with the villains. In the Enchanted Forest flashback, a restless young Ursula enlists Hook's help to run away from home. Thank you for tuning in to Once Upon a Rewatch. We are the Narrators 3. The moral of this episode is, if the subtext walks gay, talks gay, it's probably actually totally gay.
Yeah.
Visit us at Spotify for Podcasters to answer episodic questions, send us voice messages, or to find out other ways you can help support the podcast. You can find our page at podcasters.spotify.com/pod/show/Once Upon a Rewatch.
If you enjoy Once Upon a Rewatch, please leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or on your platform of choice.
Talk fairy tales with us on Instagram at Once Upon Rewatch.
On Tumblr at onceuponarewatch.tumblr.com.
The artwork for our podcast was by Lychee Ruru.
We want to say a very special thank you to the master of free music, Kevin McLeod. Our intro music is Frost Waltz, and our outro music is Fairy Tale Waltz.
This podcast uses material from episode-specific pages on the Once Upon a Time wiki at Fandom and is licensed under the Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike license.
And remember, all plot devices come with a price. All right, we did it.
We did it.
Yay.
Yay.
Record now we can time.
Go to sleep. Yeah.
Yay.
Yay.
Happy daylight savings time, everyone.
Wishing daylight savings time a very shit your pants and then die.
I like it being lighter in the evening.
Yeah, I like the more sun.
Sun is not my friend.